You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome in to this Tuesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name's Tony East. I cover the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And today, as we pivot away from coaching and focus back on the Pacers offseason ahead, we're talking all about the NBA draft, which seems like an interesting topic for the Pacers because they don't have their first-round pick. They only picked 54th this year. There's not a lot of intrigue around this draft class in general, and the Pacers don't really seem like they're building through the draft. So lowest amount of intrigue I've seen from an outside perspective from a draft from fans in Pacers history. But I think it's a little bit more interesting than you think, and I have a lot of angles I want to talk about it from. So we're going to talk about the 54th pick in general and something specific about it that I wanted to tell you guys about. And then I want to talk about some guys I like at 54, which is basically picking a name out of a hat. But I have watched enough college basketball to have some opinions. And three, I'm going to talk about trading up either into the first round or just in the second round in general. So let's just start with the 54th pick and what it is. I mean, everything 50 and later, normally I would say, is a crapshoot. And it is. To an extent, some of the draft is, but not really. You know, I think I disagree with that sentiment in general. You know, I think that the best scouting departments get something out of those picks all the time. Like, teams that have championship success get the second-round picks they buy to do well all the time. Those are reason those orgs are so good. And the Pacers specifically, you know, Edmund Sumner was a pick in the 50s. Alize Johnson was a pick in the 50s. That's just in the last couple of years. So they've had some success at that later part of the draft. Joe Young was second round. And I just thought of someone else while I was talking, and I can't remember who it was now. Niang, Georges Niang was kind of later second round too. So the Pacers have had some success later in the seconds in their history of getting guys who can, you know, be fringe contributors, or in Sumner's case more so like playoff almost contributors in the late second. So just because it's a late pick doesn't mean that it's bad. Now, 54 specifically though has been bad. Last year it was Mario Šajok. If you haven't heard that name, it's because he did not play very much in the NBA this year. He was picked by the 76ers. The best ever pick with 54 was actually 2 years ago as Shake Milton, 76ers starting point guard in the bubble. And that is, I'm not kidding you, the best 54th overall pick of all time. I mean, you look through this list and it is something bad. I remember Alec Peters, Indiana Valparaiso University guy, went there to the Suns. And Kay Felder was a pro for the Cavs a little bit. He was here before that. But before 2016, I don't even recognize the names. I mean, it's quite the rough pick. So historically, 54 has not been good, but that does not mean the Pacers cannot extract some value from this spot. Again, they've been hitting well on 54 in general, on late seconds in general. And not that they need this guy to be in the rotation or be anything, but it's just kind of a reset of your end of bench. And that doesn't, not that that's really important, but just if you can nail this pick or get a, you know, their youth pipeline is basically Aaron Holiday and Goga right now. So if they can nail this pick and get a third, and probably Sumner. So adding in a third guy or fourth guy to that mix would be really helpful. And, you know, getting this, doing well with this pick or moving up a little in the second round to get a guy you like would be a big deal. Now, something that isn't talked about a lot with this pick that I think should be is the way he would be signed should he be drafted. So if you draft a second round pick, you can sign them to the minimum, no problem, right? And minimum contracts for undrafted players, really for anybody, but for undrafted players, can only be 2 years in length. So that doesn't super matter, right? Alize Johnson just signed finished his two-year deal. Sumner got a two-way because he was injured, right? That doesn't matter. It's the 54th pick. It's a two-year deal, whatever. But what a lot of teams like to do, and what I think the Pacers will try to do, is they try to cut out the exact amount of the minimum from their full mid-level exception, and then use that to sign the player for the minimum, because then, while it's the same amount of money, because you're using it, because you're signing the player to an exception, I'm putting air quotes up, instead of to a minimum contract, you're allowed to make the deal 3 years, and you're allowed to have two option years, right? So what they could do, I'm just going to pick a guy that I'm going to talk about next segment. Let's just say they draft Grant Riller with the 54th pick in the draft. What they could do is they could sign Riller to a three-year deal where the first year is fully guaranteed, the second year is non-guaranteed, and the third year is non-guaranteed. So then what happens is if Riller becomes a stud or is a home run 54th pick, what you can do is guarantee those 2 years. You get them for all 3 years at a really cheap value still. Then at the end, you have full bird rights, so you can re-sign him for any amount. And because he's been in the league for 4 years or less, you can make him a restricted free agent and give him just a massive five-year deal right after that. So what you can't do is if you only sign him for 2 years using just a minimum deal is you only have early bird rights, so you're limited to a four-year deal and you're limited to much smaller money, which the player, if they explode in their first couple seasons, again, it's the 54th pick, so this is unlikely, but certainly possible. If they explode in that first couple years, you'll be kicking yourself because you're limited to the amount of money and time that you can re-sign them for, right? So I can't think of a great example of a team that has run into this as necessarily a problem, but teams love to get the long, like Robert Covington had, and he was undrafted, but he had the four-year, almost fully non-guaranteed deal before he got his second extension. Jokic actually was a similar way. Like, that was his second contract, but just signing these guys to a three-year deal has a lot of benefits. So I actually think the 54th pick could get signed using a minimum deal from the MLE, and then the rest could all go to one player, Justin Holiday, someone else, who knows. But the 54th pick's just a weird one just because it's so late, it has such a crappy history, but the Pacers have been really successful in the late second recently. I mean, really successful is relative, right? Like, Edmund Sumner is a home run in the 50s, so we'll see what happens this year, and I have some guys I like, and at 54, again, if you miss, you miss. It's not like the most consequential thing of all time, but if you hit, it's huge for your franchise for the reasons I said earlier, right? Getting that young player in the pipeline, potentially getting a stud for cheap for a while. So it's important to nail, and I want to talk about some of the guys I like because, of course, I'm a genius in the draft. I'm just kidding about that. Although I did love Grant Williams last year and Brandon Clark. I want that on the record. Before we continue, however, before I talk about the guys I like, I want to talk about Rock Auto because chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com, however, have the same prices for everybody, and they are reliably low. At RockAuto.com, they offer the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or an account login. They're a family business who has been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. If you go to their website, you can shop for auto and body parts from hundreds and hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything you could possibly need, whether it's for your classic daily driver. Get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Their catalog is unique. It's super easy to navigate. And best of all, their prices are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up twice as much for the same parts? Don't. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck right locked on in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that you came from us. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. So I'm not like a college basketball aficionado. In fact, I would say the opposite. I don't really dig into college basketball until the Pacers are out, although this year I still haven't because I was watching the Fever. But I did get into some during the time off in between, you know, March and August or July when the scrimmages were. So I have some knowledge of some guys I like, and I have some people who really analyze the draft on Twitter that I follow that, you know, I use their suggestions and guys that they really like to get a guide on where to start. The first guy I watched was actually a guy that Draft Twitter does not like, though, and he is on this list, although he's not my favorite guy from this list. So my absolute favorite pick for the Pacers at 54 for the longest time was a forward from LSU named Darius Days. You probably don't know much about him, and if you looked at his stats, you would say, why do you like Darius Days? He averaged 11.7 rebounds per game for LSU as a wing, forward, combo kind of guy. But he was a really good defender, and I felt like he just moved really well. And I feel like when bigger-ish dudes, he's not like big, I think he's like 6'7", but you know, when bigger-ish dudes move really well, it entices me. Like Embiid kind of ran like a guard at Kansas, and to me that always was like, oh, he's for sure going to be good. I just think the way he moves is really impressive, and he's a good cutter. He's a good offensive player despite his scoring out, but not good handle. But and I think his defense was enough to be not necessarily like immediate impact, but you know, if he's in the game, it's like whatever, replacement level, which is fine for a 54th pick. And I really liked what he could bring to the table. And LSU in general has some guys that are forwards, but the problem with Days, is that he's returning to school. He's returning to LSU, so he's not in this draft. So irrelevant, but they have two other guys that I sort of liked as well. And when you watch this team, they have a lot of like draft quality guys that could get picked. Trendon Watford, Emmett Williams are two of them. The forwards, though, that I wanted to bring up. Emmett Williams is a sophomore who has some past DV issues, so he will for sure be an avoid for me, even if he is pretty talented. But Trendon Watford, also a good player. He has really loose handle, which I didn't like, but 13.6 points, 7.2 rebounds. Really, LSU, if you watch him, has a ton of forwards that could be good picks at 54. So if you really want to start scouting yourself, maybe dig into them first. I was going to write a whole article about them before Days decided to drop out, but those are two or three guys to start with for the Pacers at 54 for me. They could swing at anything here. But the next guy is one of Draft Twitter's favorite players that I have got to catch two or three games for. Harder to find full footage on the internet of College of Charleston games. But the player in question is Grant Riller. And if you don't know much about Grant Riller, you're about to, because Grant Riller is a beast. Grant Riller was the College of Charleston's entire offense. 22 points per game. He's a senior, so that's another thing. But 22 points per game, both his junior and senior years. And his advanced stats and game are nuts. Super efficient, really good at getting to the free throw line. Pretty solid three-point shooter on decent volume. 33.6% usage, right? So they ran everything through him. Great assist rate, great steal rate, pretty solid defender. Kind of low turnover guy. Just a really solid guard. And he can really score and pass. He did a lot of creation for that for his team. So that's another good one for me, Grant Riller. Next up, this guy will probably be gone by the Pacers pick, is Isaiah Joe. You might know Isaiah Joe if you watch IU, because he played for Arkansas and he smoked the Hoosiers with a few threes in that game. I remember that one. Isaiah Joe is really popular as a prospect for multiple reasons, but the big one is his three-point shooting. I'm not making this up. He shot over 10 attempts per game in college, which is insane because those games are shorter. He just chucked them away. 10.6 three-point attempts per game, and he attempted less than 14 total shots. That should tell you a lot about what he does on offense. And despite that crazy high volume, he took 9.1 per game in his collegiate career at Arkansas and hit 38% of them, right? So this dude can just bomb. I mean, it's some of them are just ridiculous, like not Steph Curry-esque, like down a peg from that just level of ridiculous. But, I mean, just ripping shots. You're like, why did he take that? And then he makes it, you know. It's really ridiculous. His three-point attempt rate in college was 76.3, which is crazy. Super efficient, 57% true shooting. So he is a great three-point shooter. Low turnovers, pretty high usage still. Not a negative passer. His defense is not that good. But, I mean, if you can shoot like that and at that volume, that will translate. I mean, basically no matter what, just hit the NBA and chuck. So he was a tough one because at first he announced he was returning to school. And then he backed out and is back to the NBA. So Isaiah Joe, I have a feeling that someone like the Sixers or the Mavs will just dive in on the shooting that they need and take him before the Pacers. But if he's at 54, heck, if he's even at 40, I might be willing to use one of the future seconds to move up and get him because that dude can shoot. And his teammate is the next guy here, Mason Jones. He's become really popular in draft Twitter. So I caught him cursory in catching up on on Isaiah Joe, who I also caught because of that IU game. But Mason Jones, guard for Arkansas as well. A little less of a shooter, but more of a scorer, 22 points per game. More of his scoring came from the inside than the outside, but really good player, good at getting to the line, solid enough passer. Once again, like Riller from earlier, just ridiculous advanced stats, 61% true shooting, 23% assist rate, over 30% usage. Turnovers a bit of a problem this year, but not crazy. Good steal percentage. So he also 66.8% free throw rate. So he's a stud at getting to the line, right? And like the minimum bar for like NBA athletics or NBA creation ability is, can you get past college defenders easily? And I felt like with Jason Tatum, this is funny. So this isn't like a perfect bar of analysis, because something that I struggled with Tatum when Tatum was at Duke is he couldn't get by guys all the time, and he would just not settle, but he would take these mid-range shots that now we know he's amazing at, and he's an amazing self-creator, but it felt like he couldn't get by these guys, and I was like, I don't know how good he's going to be. But then TJ Leaf, who Pacers fans know very well, could get by a lot of guys in college, and it was super strange that, you know, he just that didn't translate at all. But Jones, great at getting by guys for Arkansas, drew a ton of fouls, so another gun. And the last one is the one I wrote about, Elijah Hughes. He was the best player for Syracuse this season, and Syracuse guys are really hard to evaluate defensively because they play a zone. I had to dig way back to his freshman year in East Carolina to find tons of man-to-man footage from him. Mediocre defender at best, but really grew. I mean, he was a three-year player with a transfer, but 19 points per game as a senior, could light it up from just, he took some bomb threes, not Isaiah Joe level of a shooter, but took over 7 a game, made 34%, and really shot him from everywhere. He was the best offensive player on this good Syracuse team, and I don't necessarily think, you know, again, because the defense is hard to project, that he's guaranteed to be a good NBA player, but I think his floor is decently like replacement level, which for 54 is again solid, and because he can play guard wing, I kind of like him. But he's not the most efficient, and he's not the best passer. I mean, he's just kind of like decent at a lot of stuff, but not awesome at anything. But he's got the potential because of his range. You know, some of the threes he made were from ridiculously far away to be a pretty good scorer. I just don't know how well that's going to translate. But I liked him when I scouted him. I think he can be good in the NBA. And if they pick him at 54, right, he's pretty popular. I think being the best player on his team is. And that's something for a lot of these guys, right? Like Joe and Mason Jones, two guys I just talked about, were on the same team. I talked about a bunch of LSU guys on the same team who are all really good. And you could argue either of them are the best. Riller clearly the best on his team, and Jones clearly the best on their team. And I think that does get you a peg up because you're always being guarded by the best guy or like drawing the attention of the defense. So, yeah, I think Hughes is a good one. I wrote an entire article about him if you want to see some video footage. So go check that out. But, yeah, those are some guys I like at 54. If they pick any of them on draft night, I think the Pacers will be happy, and I will be happy, although I have a lot of work to do in the draft department, but those are guys I like. But now the fun part, and the part that people actually care about, instead of me just talking about the 54th pick in the draft, trading up into the first round or into earlier in the second round, merits of doing so, is it even possible? Let's talk about it after a short break. Everyone's favorite words, trading up. Can we trade up for a LaMelo Ball, trade Miles for the second pick, blah, blah, blah. Everybody loves trading up into the draft. Kevin Pritchard did talk about the draft when I asked him in the team's end-of-season presser how he can improve the roster without cap space, things like that, without a first-round pick. He did say, quote, I do believe this draft is a draft that we could potentially get in at a higher level, unquote. I mean, I think he's going to say that every draft just because the question was phrased in a way that makes, you know, him say, hey, if we're going to get better, we got to move for a pick. They traded a pick in a bad draft for Brogdon, 24th pick in this draft for Brogdon. Home run, 2 seconds, don't care. So that trade's a win every time, but now they don't have a first this year. So the pro of trading for a first in any draft, obviously, is you get a good prospect. And the Pacers' pipeline of prospects right now, like I said earlier, right, like Turner and Sabonis, why did his name just escape me? I just felt like an idiot just staring at my screen for a second. Are young, right? They kind of count as prospects, although I would call them more like established NBA players now. But basically, their youth pipeline is Aaron Holiday, who's for sure at least a rotation level guy. Goga, who TBD, but I think he's still going to be good. And maybe Sumner, probably Sumner. And, you know, they have vets locked up for a while. It's not like the biggest deal that their youth pipeline's kind of bad, but their youth pipeline's kind of bad. So there is some merit to trading into the first round for that reason alone. Just add a body and add a little hope to the growth of this team, right? We talk about with potential like D'Antoni, because we're talking about the coaching stuff so much. What we just said is, you know, if he wants to coach for 4 more years, they have a 4 more year plan. But after that, it's kind of murky because of their lack of young players that have to really pivot on the fly with moves at that point. So getting into the first round, obviously, is never a bad thing if it doesn't cost you too much, even if it's a crappy draft. But there is a cursory benefit that ancillary might have been a better word there. Ancillary benefit that isn't talked about as much. So I did talk about this in the first segment, and I kind of did this on purpose to make it easier to understand here. So if you draft someone in the first round, they don't come out of an exception, and they just get a cap hold against the salary cap, right? So even if you're over the cap, you're allowed to get that player still. And I think that is really valuable. Like, it's like a free a $3 million player you can't have, or it costs an exception to get if you draft in the second round. So if you draft a guy at 30 versus 31, one guy you get without using any exception and one guy you might have to. So that has some value for teams over the cap just because it allows them to add a roster slot without using their roster building tools. Like the Sixers were really probably happy to keep their first rounder from the Thunder because of that, because they're close to the tax. I mean, the Pacers kind of are, but they're fake close to the tax. I talked about that last week. But so that is one of the merits to trading into the first round to me. And it's the biggest merit, actually. Well, no, it's not. The biggest merit is getting youth in the youth pipeline. But it's a big merit to me to be able to add at least a decently talented player that you can justify for sure putting in the rotation at any time because you just picked him in the first round. And also, it helps you build your team in that way. However, the trouble is getting there is hard. So last year, I need to look this up. I told myself I was going to do this before. It's literally the only tab I told myself to look up that I didn't have open. The Cavaliers traded for the 30th pick from the Pistons. And I don't believe they gave up. They got Kevin Porter Jr., who turned out to be awesome. I don't think they gave up a first. Yeah, the Pistons got the Jazz 2020 second rounder, Portland's 2021 and 2023 second rounders, and Miami's 2024 second rounder for the 30th pick, which is the last first round pick. So that still fits the salary thing I just talked about. So they gave the reason I'm highlighting this deal is because the Cavs were able to get a first without giving up anything except for a ton of future seconds. And the Pacers have a Jazz future second, some Heat future seconds, and a Bucks one. Now, those aren't great, but if you give up all of those, maybe you can get 30 from, you know, whoever ends up winning the title that's true. Whoever owns the team that wins the title's pick. If that deal is possible, I might go for that. Kevin Pritchard talks about accruing all these assets. This might be the time to do it just because of what I said, you know, getting that guy who doesn't count against your exceptions and you need youth in the pipeline. That might be a good time to do it, but I think moving up in this draft, because of the way it is, I think is a good opportunity to do it. Like a lot of the draft experts have said, when you call a draft a bad draft, I think a lot of times that happens because the top or the lotto is bad, and that's true. Right? That means that you're going to look back at this draft class and kind of go, ugh, you know, like you sort through the top 14 picks and go, wow, none of those guys panned out. Like with 2013, it was similar. Depot turned out really awesome, but, you know, you still kind of go, ugh, like this random player might have gone top five in a redraft and stuff like that. It'll be a draft like that, I think, but all the draft expert-y people think the range from like 15 or 20 to like 40 is all pretty even. So getting up even from 54 just to like 38 or something, which probably only costs you like one future second. I think a trade similar to that happened last year, just something that simple, ups the value a ton of their pick this year if there's a team that doesn't like anybody or doesn't have the roster slots to do it. And, you know, I'd be willing to use the Bucks second from next year. I'd be willing, you know, who knows what their situation is with Giannis. I'd be willing, I don't think Pritchard would be unwilling to do anything, but just because of the way this draft is, I think that there's merit in the Pacers' cap situation. I think there's good merit to trading into the first round and up in the second round and given the guys they have. So trading up, I think, is actually beyond Kevin Pritchard's fuzzy buzzwords that he's going to say no matter what the question is about the draft. Oh, we could trade in. We like some guys, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, duh. But there's actually like logistical, non-specific player reasons that they could try to trade up in this draft. Now, because something I just said, because their roster is so full already, right? 12 guys coming back for sure if they keep McConnell. Whoever they pick probably won't play very much. That probably dissuades them from going all the way to a first rounder and investing that kind of resources. But I think moving up to, you know, if you're just replacing Alizé is the only offseason move you make, you keep Jakar, you keep Justin, you keep McConnell, and you replace Alizé with 54. If you can instead replace Alizé with say 40 or 35 or something, you know, I think that's a solid move. So solid reasons to trade up in the draft. I think it's a very, despite, you know, it being a lackluster draft and the Pacers picking 54, some pretty interesting avenues for them to explore, which is why I wanted to talk about it for an entire show. And then I expect to go 25 minutes, but here we are. So Thank you guys so much for listening. Me and Adam will be back tomorrow. It's finally time if we've done off-season dates, although that all got pushed back a month, but we'll talk about that tomorrow. We've done the draft. We've done all the of Kevin Pritchard's comments. We've looked ahead for the offseason. It's finally time to dig into free agency from a Pacers perspective a little bit. We're not going to talk about guys that could sign, but we're going to look at the guys on the Pacers roster who are potentially on the way out or entering free agency this summer and preview free agency for all of them. So stay tuned for that. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.